the details, you get much more appreciation for what he went through. Things happened pretty quickly in 1965. He was struggling to get his books printed. Here I have a copy of one. This isn't the original, it's an imitation one, but this is what they looked like. He worked really hard to get these done. That in itself is a great big story, how he went to the publisher, and the publisher said, if you don't have money, you can't print these books. So he had to go find donors. One of the donors was Sumati Murarji, who was a woman involved in business in India, which in itself, that's pretty heroic for a woman to try to be in business. But she had a reputation as helping spiritual people. Prabhupada went there and asked, can you help? I've got this book I'm working on. He showed her the manuscript and she said, yeah, this looks good. Gave him some money. He was able to get that started. Okay, let's see who we still have here. Okay, good. And going through all of those struggles, he printed the first volume, and that was really hard. It took 4 months of writing. He gave them the manuscript. They worked on the first few chapters. They printed up one copy, and he looked at it, and he said, no. Made a mistake here, made a mistake here. So that's normal. He corrected it, sent it back. Typically, 3 times they have to do that to correct it, then set the type by hand. I don't know if it was the kind of type, like you get one letter and you put it in like they used to do with newspapers, but it sounded kind of like that. Finally, get it right, got the first few chapters done. Meanwhile, he's going back and forth into Vrindavan or staying in the Chipiwada temple in Delhi, writing the translation and the commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that took 4 months. Once he got that started, he got a few little donations, got a couple of big ones. He was just hanging in by a thread. And that's what I'm going to be talking about today, is he was just following all of the threads. There's just this little tiny thread. There's so many times when it almost didn't happen. It was just hanging there by something that didn't look very strong. But he said, I'm going to follow this through. I have to. I have to do it. And in the song that we're going to sing today, let's see. Let's scroll down to, is it the second verse? Go scroll down to the second verse. Maybe we'll just start with that. Tara Icha Balavan. So what this means is, by the strong desire of Bhakti Siddhanta, Paschat Yete Tan Tan. Let's see, can you scroll down to the translation? Number 2. His desire is very powerful, and thus he is causing the holy name of Lord Gauranga to spread throughout all the countries of the Western world, in all the cities, towns, and villages on the earth. Extending to all the oceans, rivers, and streams, everyone may chant the names of Krishna and Ram. So I was thinking, this strong desire, Prabhupada sees that in his guru. It's by his strong desire that this is happening. And he himself also has a very strong desire. And so that's what we're going to focus on here. So we'll sing just that second line. Thank you.
balavan pashyatyete tantan hoy chati gorangirna. Taraicha balavan pashyatyete tantan hoy chati
get to that. We'll get to that. Everybody knows it, right?
We hope so. They will.
We will. We're going to sing it later. But a strong desire, and I was thinking, okay, we're supposed to be talking about Bhagavad Gita also because Sunday feast, new people. Is anybody new here? It seems like everybody's new. Welcome. Where are you from? Boynton Beach, okay. I don't know where that is. Must be a nice place. Oh, okay. Boynton Beach. So in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a lot of discussion about desire and controlling desire and how certain kinds of desires are the gateways to hell. Three things are mentioned in chapter 3: lust, anger, greed. As soon as you feel them, you're in hell. It's awful. Lust, anger, greed. It's not like you feel lust, you feel anger, you feel greed. When you die, you're going to go to hell. No, it's immediate. As soon as you feel those things, we know it's wrong. How do we rise above it? And that's what the Bhagavad Gita is about. Arjuna was saying, these people, this war is based on lust, anger, and greed. Therefore, it's sinful. And he's thinking any kind of desire is sinful. But there are pure desires, and that's what we're talking about here, by the pure desire of Bhaktisiddhanta. So we've been studying this with our little study group, the story of Prabhupada going on the journey, and I was wondering, what is it that motivates someone to go against all the odds? All along the way, people are asking, why are you doing this? You're going without food, you're going without sleep, without comfort. And he says, I have to do it. My guru told me to do it. And his guru didn't specifically tell him to do it. It was like a general direction to everybody that his guru met. Whoever he met said, the people in the West need this. You should spread it. Everyone should spread it. It needs to be done. But somehow our Prabhupada took that and said, I'm going to do it. He really wants it to be done. So he had a pure desire. Pure desires, Bhagavad Gita also goes on, explains the three modes of nature, how those pollute our pure desire. Three modes of nature, chapter 14, then chapter 15, 16, talks about godly and ungodly qualities. So, godly qualities, top of the list is abhayam, fearlessness, sattva sangshuddhe, a desire to purify one's existence. So these are the godly qualities. Asura qualities are something else. And finally, the Bhagavad Gita concludes with, here's a pure desire, just do this because I want it. I'm God, I'm pure, this is what needs to be done. And so Prabhupada takes that, and when you have a pure desire, things happen. And that's our whole purpose here. That's what we're trying to do, is cultivate a pure desire. One thing is, pure desires are contagious, just like impure desires are. So the more we focus on pure desires of pure people, it has an influence on us. The more we spend time criticizing others, looking at impure things, being disgusted by impure things, that also has an influence on us. So today we're going to focus on the drama of Prabhupada, who in 1922, his guru met him, well, he met his guru for the first time, and as you do to a saintly person, he was bowing down, and before he even got up, his guru said, "You're educated, you should speak this message to the English-speaking people." In the very first meeting, they didn't even know each other, but that was the pure desire of his guru. And at first, our Prabhupada was reluctant. I say our Prabhupada because Bhaktisiddhanta is also given that title of Prabhupada. So our Prabhupada was resistant, and he said, "Well, there's like political problems here in India. Who's going to listen to us?" But Bhaktisiddhanta Prabhupada said, "It doesn't matter. This message is more important." His desire was pure enough, and that's the thing. When you have a pure desire, it transcends everything. It rises above all the influence of the three modes of nature. We can recite the Sanskrit, "Mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitam brahma bhuyaya kalpate." What that means, loosely translated, is if you have a pure desire to please and to serve God, that rises above. It purifies all of the impurities that we may be carrying. We need to cultivate that. It's like cultivating a seed that's planted in our heart. We water it, that seed, by hearing more and more about pure desires, pure activities, pure speech, pure thoughts. And it grows. It's magic. And so Prabhupada wanted this process to be spread, wanted to be made available all over the world. People in America had heard about yoga, but nobody knew anything about this process of bhakti yoga, this process of planting a pure desire in the heart. All that we'd heard of here was reduce desire, cut out desire, become peaceful. But peace isn't really the goal. Peace is nice. I used to live in a really peaceful place, and I got restless. I wanted to get out. I felt like I've got something more important than peace to share with people. And so I went to places like New York City, and I really enjoyed it. Because I met so many people, and in the midst of stress, sometimes those little spaces in between, then you really feel peace. Otherwise, if it's peaceful all the time, we tend to get bored. But if you are on the highest platform, then any situation, you'll take that. And mostly what a devotee wants is the opportunity to serve and to help others. So Prabhupada's life, you could say it was peaceful. He was living in a holy city of Vrindavan. But there was this seed that had been planted in his heart. I need to spread this to English-speaking world. So he couldn't just sit there peacefully. While he was sitting there peacefully, he was writing translation and commentary to this book, the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a great big library of books. There it is up in the bookcase there. Is that the whole thing? It looks like it, yeah. It's the whole thing. And then Chaitanya Charitamrita and so many other books that he wrote, he translated. So sitting in his room in Vrindavan, a holy city, he started the translation and commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. And as I said earlier, he took it to the publishing houses. Finally, he got the arrangements made. Yes, we'll do this. And it took them 4 months of the hard work of printing, checking, proofreading, and then even then, at the end, there's a list of mistakes, misprints, errata, appendix 2, a few misspellings that were overlooked, but still, it's a beautiful book. And with that book, he was able to get sponsorship to help print the second volume, which went a little faster. He was starting to learn the techniques. He cut out the middleman. He went right to the printers instead of through this other trust. Then to print the third volume, once he got that done, he met the prime minister. And his life at this time, all of the details that we read, it's like it's starting to look really good. Something happens really good, and then there's a setback. Then again, something happens really good, then another setback. But he never got, well, he said, I'm not one to become discouraged. He just kept on trying. And he followed every thread, no matter how faint. There's a little interest here, this person might help me. He followed it through. He took a train ride out to Gorakhpur to visit someone. They said, this person might help you. He spent almost all of the money he had on that train ride. It was a gamble. And then he got there, and Hanuman Prasad Poddar gave him 4,000 rupees to help with the printing. That was a big breakthrough. It was a gamble. So he had his train fare back. He used that money to print the books. Once he had the books, he started getting some recognition, but still, it wasn't getting anywhere. It always seemed like there was some setback. But he kept trying. And just like with his guru, whoever he met, his guru said, you should preach this in the West. Prabhupada met people. He would ask them, I'm trying to go to the West. Somebody heard him and said, my son lives in America. And Prabhupada said, okay, yeah, great. See if he'll sponsor me. That was in February of 1965. While Prabhupada is traveling around, trying to sell his books to libraries and bookstores. I should have saved that. There's one bookseller who had a catalog, and that catalog was going all over the world. People were buying books, Prabhupada's books, from that catalog. They were being placed in libraries all over the world. In University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana, they purchased those back in 1964, 65, three volumes. It's back in the hidden stacks. You have to be a special person to get in there. So universities all over. And so Prabhupada was talking with this man, asking, you know, how can we do this? And he said, well, I'm doing the best I can. And just keep coming out with the new volumes. When the institutions buy one, they're going to want to complete the set. So that looked a little hopeful. So it was in February that he talked to someone who said, yeah, I've got a son. By the time he got back to Bombay and he checked his mail, he saw the forms of sponsorship. He said, where'd this come from? And when did that happen? I think February, it was like in late March, so it happened pretty quick. Then, so he had the sponsorship. So then he goes to Sumati Murarji, who runs the Sindhya Navigation Company. And he asks, can you give me passage? And she said, no, I'm not going to. If you go there, it's too cold, you're too old, no one's going to listen to you. People there are not as cooperative as they are in India. They're not interested in listening to sadhus. And besides, if you go there and you die, it's going to be on my head. I don't want to send you there to die. The Prabhupada persisted. He just parked himself out in front of her office and told her secretary, tell her this, and keep pushing. So finally he got a personal audience with her again. And she said, you really want to do this? And he said, yes, I do. I said, all right, go ahead. But first, you have to get your passport, your P form, and your visa. And so it was really nice of her. She gave him her secretary, Mr. Chokshi, to go and help Prabhupada fill out the forms, go around, because he had some business with the management, government. He was able to help Prabhupada get those things. Getting the P form was one last struggle. We won't go into all of that. But finally, it's mentioned that Mr. Chokshi also took Prabhupada around to buy clothes, warm clothes to take to America, a woolen jacket, and some new dhotis. So since it was set, he's going, they gave him this diary. Scindia Navigation Diary. Here's a picture of it. And I got to see this diary. It's been kept in the care of Bali Mardan. Prabhupada told Bali Mardan, you can have this. It was found in a trunk of his things. It was kept in a safe in the New York temple. And in 1970 or 72, they found it. And Prabhupada said, Bali Mardan, you can keep that. So it's still in his personal care. He delivered it to the archives back in the 90s, and I looked at it. I got to pick it up and look at it, and there's Prabhupada's signature across the front and on the back. And in there, you see all kinds of, well, there's information about the Scindia Steamship Navigation Company, and I get the idea that Prabhupada read a lot of this information about the shipping company, because there's a fleet of 47 ships, and number 43, there's a line under it, Jaladutta, made in 1959. GRT is 9,177 gross something tonnage, gross rated tonnage maybe. DWT, 12,000. So they have, it's a pretty big fleet of ships, and they all have names: Jala Dharma, Jala Vishnu, Jala Dhruv, Jala Deer, Jala Duhita, Jala Gomati, Jala Ganga, etc., etc. Messenger on the water, Jala Duta, yes. Number 45 is Jala Krishna, which was built in 1960. Jala Kirti, Jala Kala. So Sumati Muraraji, she wanted to make sure that Abhay Swami Bhaktivedanta, that was his name at the time, that he would be put on a ship that had a captain that understood the needs of a sadhu, vegetarian meals, and the respect that is due to him. So she chose Jaladutta and Captain Pandya, Arun Pandya, and so it was set that they would leave in Calcutta on the 13th of September. Was it, what was the date? What was the month? Was it September? Yes. No, that arrives in September. August the 13th. Yeah. August 13. So up until then, if you study this diary, I watched a little documentary of, who's the suspense guy? Alfred Hitchcock. He was saying, if you want to create suspense, you know, you could have people, like, they're sitting there, and then a bomb goes off, and there's an explosion, and it's a mess, and it's over in just a few seconds. But if there's a time bomb, and people are doing something really boring, they're just sitting there playing cards, they have this really boring conversation, but there's a time bomb going under there, that just builds the suspense more and more, the more boring the situation is. So I really enjoyed, I'm not going to read this to you though, but all of the things building up to Prabhupada. He's going to this office, he's trying to sell some books here, he's meeting all of these different people, and the whole time there's this, he's getting on the ship in August. So this really big thing that he's built up his whole life to. Thursday the 15th, see Gandhi's secretary, go to the principal, St. Xavier's Institution of Education, Bombay, kept one set to be paid in the afternoon. He's holding little programs here and there. Then finally, he boards a train bound for Calcutta. And he goes to Calcutta, he has a few days, and then in his notes he says, goes to Mayapur, takes a train to Mayapur, just for the day. And while he's there, he goes to his guru's temple, offers prayers, and then there's a story that the pujari at the Shantipur temple told. Does everybody know that story? Really? I thought everybody knew that. Shantipur, this is the home of Advaita Acharya, and Prabhupada goes there to pray also. He said, this is where the Sankirtan movement started. I come here to get blessings. That's another story to be told. Then he gets onto the ship Friday the 13th. Today at 9 a.m. embarked on Jaladutta. Came with me, Bhagwati, the Darwan of Sindhya, Mr. Sengupta, Mr. Ali, and Vrindavan. That's his son, Vrindavan Chandra Day. The cabin is quite comfortable. It is owner's residence, and therefore the sitting room, the bedroom, the bath, and privy, all equipped with first-class materials. Everything is nice in the first-class compartment, and thanks to Lord Krishna for his enlightening Sumati Murariji for all these arrangements. I'm quite comfortable. The ship started at 1:30 p.m., very slowly, from the dock. Stopped midway at the Ganges till 11 p.m., then turned toward the front and started. It is quite steady. I cannot understand in my cabin if it is at all moving. I'm so comfortable. So, starts off pretty good, looks really good. But just his second day at sea, it gets really rough. Saturday the 14th. The ship started at 11 o'clock in the morning, majestically. I did not feel any jerking whatsoever. But on reaching the Bay of Bengal, there is tilting of the ship and a little rolling also. The roughness increased gradually on the upper Bay of Bengal, and I felt seasickness. There was vomiting tendency and dizziness, and I felt uncomfortable the whole day and night. The sea was foamy. All through, it appeared like a big plate of water extending to 40 square miles, but factually, it was endless. So to say, it is a vivid example of God's Maya, because it appears like something, but factually, it is something else. First day at sea, really rough. It's foaming all over. Next day in the morning, I woke up and felt a little better, but I felt no hunger. Was in the captain's room, chatting with the officers. They were dispatching news to other ships. I saw a chart of different appearances, photocall of the sea. The grades are 0 to 12 degrees, and I think we are passing on the sea between 4 to 7 points. The scene of the 10th point was furious, and the 12th, Sirius. The captain advised me to take more solid food. So, anybody know about nautical terms? Any Navy people here? Because I think what it's saying is the points is like how much the ship is tipping. And he says at 10th point is furious, at 12th point, serious. And he said, we were at 4 to 7 points. So that's pretty, it was pretty rough, especially for someone never been at sea. Then the next day, he's talking about, again, in the morning there was sunshine, but after 11 the sea became a little more rough, showing foamy waves from the distance. After passing the latitude of Trichinopoli, we experienced a dark cloud subsequently raining all over the sea. The siren sounded on account of hazy vision to warn other ships coming from opposite direction. At about 12 noon, it is raining heavily, and the ship is stopped moving, occasionally sounding the siren. There's constant sounds of thunderbolt. This is the first time I'm experiencing heavy rains in the midst of the deep ocean. From 12 noon, we were passing through cyclonic weather. The ship is tilting too much. I felt seasick all day and night. 3 p.m., the ship turned towards Ceylon coast, and we are now in the Ceylon water. Okay, first 3 days at sea, it's rough. Storms and being out in the ocean, heavy storms, thunderstorms, white seas off in the distance, big waves. And then, so they stop at Sri Lanka. He gets to go ashore and walk around, get some relief. Then they put out again, Sunday the 22nd. We are now in the dockyard of Cochin. The dock, and he describes the dock, but the important thing is there, I saw my books from Bombay arrived in 5 cases, and the agents loaded them on the ship at 4 p.m. So, 5 big trunks of books. That's what he's taking with him to America. Okay, jumping ahead to Friday the 10th, September. Wait, did I skip? All right, so when I held that diary in my hands, I skimmed through the pages, and then I got to Wednesday 25th. And that's where you see that line going down. Wednesday 25th, from beginning from today down to the 31st, Tuesday, passed over a great struggle, great crisis in the struggle for life and death. A separate statement has to be written on this crisis area. So I noticed, you don't see it in this, but on the original book, you can see his handwriting is very shaky for a couple of days after that. And even the line is a little shaky. This is when he had a heart attack. And this happens in... the Arabian Sea. Again, rough seas in the Arabian Sea, and then he goes into toward the Suez Canal. What's that called? The Red Sea. And then he just goes back into writing his notes. Friday the 3rd. We started from Port Said today at about 1 p.m. The Port Said city is nice. And there, I learned from a letter that he wrote to Sripad Narayan Maharaj when he arrived, a week after he arrives in America, he said, the main thing is that I am alone and I am in my old age. Because of this, crossing 12,000 miles in a ship, I became very sick. I crossed the Bay of Bengal, the Indian Ocean, the Arabian Sea, the Red Sea, the Mediterranean Sea, and the Atlantic Ocean. I passed through Asia, Europe, and America. I crossed these oceans and seas and became so sick. Due to my request, they served me vegetarian meals on the ship, yet I could not take them. I fasted continuously for 8 to 10 days. I suffered terribly from colic pain. Afterwards, the captain of the ship purchased an electric stove for me in Port Said. I then cooked for myself and took prasad. If they hadn't managed this stove for me, maybe there would have been no possibility of me reaching America. I could have died on the way, but instead Krishna mercifully brought me here. Why Krishna has brought me here, only he knows. Oh. So he doesn't mention the stove here in the diary. And jumping ahead. And as they pull out from Port Said, and then they enter the Atlantic Ocean, then he sees where is that? All right, well, I'll just start reading here. Friday the 10th, September. Today the ship is plying very smoothly. I feel today better, but I'm feeling separation from Sri Vrindavan and my lords, Sri Govinda, Gopinath, Radha Damodar. The only solace is Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, in which I'm tasting the nectarine of Lord Chaitanya's Leela. I have left Bharat Bhumi just to execute the order of Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in pursuance of Lord Chaitanya's order. I have no qualification, but I've taken up the risk just to carry out the order of His Divine Grace. I depend fully on their mercy, so far away from Vrindavan. Next day. Today the ship ran on very smoothly. The sky was clear, and there was sunshine all the day. At about 7:30 in the morning, we passed on the Azores Group Islands under the Portugal Republic. I got to tell a friend there who lives in the Azores, a devotee. He was so happy to hear that Prabhupada saw the Azores. Next day, Sunday the 12th. Today there was a great deal of lurching, although the sky is clear. Mrs. Pandya, although a little lady, but very intelligent and learned also, she has foretold about my future, thanks to her prediction, all blessings of Lord Krishna for her. The crisis which I supposed to have crossed, is also mentioned by her. If I have crossed the crisis, then it is goodwill of Lord Krishna, my friend and philosopher. Prabhupada, a few times in this, calls Krishna his friend and philosopher. In the evening, there was too much lurching, and I felt seasickness. I could not take my food properly. Next day. Today is the 32nd day of our journey from Calcutta. After midnight yesterday, the lurching decreased and I felt relief. In the morning also, I could not take my breakfast. Then I cooked bati khichdi. It appeared to be delicious and I was able to take some food. Today I have disclosed my mind to my companion, Lord Sri Krishna. There is a Bengali poem made by me today in this connection. So that's the song that we are going to sing. Whoever wants to stay for this. Today I have disclosed my mind to my companion, Lord Sri Krishna. So in the song, Krishna Tava Punya Have Bhai, it's usually translated, "Oh brothers," but other people look at it and they say, no, what he's saying is he's calling Krishna Bhai. My dear Krishna, if you want the mercy of Radharani, if you want to be happy, you need to get the mercy of Radharani. Then the story goes on saying, here is Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta, who is very dear to Radharani. He has this desire. And if you make this desire, if you fulfill this desire, then you're going to please Radharani. So it's like a really deep, intimate view into Prabhupada's personal. Anyway, I hope nobody gets upset that I say that because it's so personal. All right, shall we sing the song or should I go on with the story? Story? Story?
Song.
How many for song? Okay. All right, well, we save some more story for next time. Yes?
Story.
All right, maybe three more minutes of story. Yeah, we're going to do the song. But this letter is so good. When Prabhupada arrives in Boston, okay, yeah, this story really needs to go on for 5 or 6 more hours. I did this once with a small group, and we just read it and went on for 2 hours before we sang the song. And then we read some more from it. So here, Prabhupada's writing, he says, to Sripad Narayan Maharaj, dated October 4, 1965, please accept my dandavats and also convey my dandavats to Muni Maharaj and of all the other Vaishnavas. Muni Maharaj, Prabhupada took sannyas together. You've probably seen the photo of him and Muni Maharaj. By the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, I have had so much work to do since I came to the West that although I was thinking of writing you a letter, up until now I could not write. I came to stay here for 1 month, but if I can stay here longer, the work will be done well. He talks about the article from the Butler Eagle newspaper, and he writes the whole thing out in his letter. To cross the Atlantic Ocean took 10 days. The Great Sea is usually full of storms and fog and is very disturbing, but by the mercy of Krishna, there is no disturbance. The captain of the ship, the main officer, told me, this kind of quiet Atlantic I've never seen in my life. I told them that this is only by Krishna's mercy, nothing else. After the troublesome storm in the Arabian Sea, I knew that if I had to face a storm like that again, I would die. I am thinking that the preaching will be very good here. I am lecturing some days for an hour and some days for 1 half hour. So at the Agarwal's house, he asked them, can you invite some people over? So every night at 6 until 9 o'clock, people were coming, and Sally Agarwal said, we had a lot of friends and we're pretty educated people. And they asked him a lot of good questions. They were fascinated with this Swami. This is the first time I've come to a foreign country, crossing 12,000 miles, yet I am never afraid to speak in front of them. For the first time in my life, I delivered a speech in a church. The main thing is that I am alone and I'm in my old age. Because of this, crossing 12,000 miles in a ship, I became very sick. And then all the things I read about, got very sick, got the stove, and then this is a very, very expensive country. The laborers earn more than gentlemen in India. They are paid 80 or 90 rupees daily. Everybody has a motor car, since all the offices and markets are very far away. Every civilized person has one car, which costs 10,000 rupees. People drive the cars themselves. They have no paid drivers to do it for them, nor do they keep servants. There are lakhs and lakhs of motor cars. When I came from New York to Butler, I saw that on 2 lanes for 500 miles, there was a solid line of cars. At night in the city, the shops are lit up and it appears like daytime. There are so many bridges and overpasses that the cars never need to pass each other on narrow roads. Every motor car is generally going not less than 50 miles per hour. So that's his report back home. And those were shared with other members. And everyone cheered when they heard what Prabhupada was doing. So the song, I have copies of it here. And the way I did it was, well, you're the singer. Who would like to distribute these? And everyone move in close so we could do this. So these are Let's see. These are the first three, and then this is the rest of it, and then the translations. So give them one, and I only made a few of those. Yep, one of those and two of the others. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So you want to give a little of the translation and then start singing.
All right. So this is the bhajan called Krishna Tava Punya Have Bhai. And it was written by Srila Prabhupada on the Jaladuta in his diary in 1965 on his passage over from India. And the translation goes as follows. There's a refrain, which is...
You going to play harmonium or tambura?
As you wish.
Okay, yeah.
I'm better at harmonium. So.
Okay.
Yeah, you play tambura. Like this. One, two, three, four. You can do that. The refrain is... Krishna tava punya have bhai. Krishna tava punya have bhai. So that's the main refrain. And the second part of the verse goes, Hey punya koribe jabe, Radharani suki have. Dhruva ati bolito matai. So translation of this is, Oh brother, the Supreme Lord Krishna will bestow virtue upon you, but he will do this only when Srimati Radharani first becomes pleased with you. This I surely declare to you.